Greetings, Hoopsheads. Welcome to Locked On Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. It's Tuesday, May 1st. I'm your host, Aliko Carter. As you all already know, Stephen Curry is going to return to the lineup tonight. I spoke a little bit about that with Locked On Wolves' Colton Molesky earlier today.
So in that case, when you're talking about how they're set up to handle Anthony Davis and kind of be able to work around whatever kind of monster performance he's able to put up in some of these games, would the scarier prospect be that Jrue Holiday and Rajon Rondo, playoff Rondo, really lock down their man-to-man matchups on the outside and don't need a double team versus Davis having just an insane 40-point game?
That's an interesting question, Colton. And Rondo and Jrue Holiday, two of the best defensive guards left in the playoffs. And I don't see them locking down Clay, and we haven't even gotten to Stephen Curry, who's very probable to play tonight. And I don't see Curry being out for a month and a half and then coming back and getting locked down by Rajon Rondo or Jrue Holiday. Mm-hmm. I just think that the Warriors are going to spring him open, that he's going to spring himself open. The knee has been listed, you know, talked about ad nauseum, 100% now. They say no pain, no limitation in movements, no minutes limitation. And also his ankle injury from earlier this season has had time to heal since his meniscus also needed time to heal. So I think that this is going to change the game such that they're going to have to game plan around that. And they're going to do what Anthony Davis did, the Warriors did against Anthony Davis, which is to send doubles, triple teams towards Stephen Curry. But then you've got Draymond Green working downhill in the 4-on-3, finding open shooters on either side or just going to the rim on his own. It's hard to game plan for the Warriors with four all-stars. And Rajon Rondo and Jrue Holiday have their work cut out for them defensively.
We went on to discuss the potential Houston Golden State series in the conference finals.
So we're talking Warriors, we're talking Golden State basketball, what they've done against the Pelicans in one game, what you kind of anticipate from them, and how they can continue to be successful in this series. There's been a lot of talk this year about the Rockets versus the Warriors, which team looks better. As somebody who put some money on the Rockets going into the season to make the finals, just on a wing and a prayer, they've been really impressive. I mean, I think I got them at like plus 190 money, so it wasn't bad. But you're looking at these two teams, and the Timberwolves were dispatched pretty easily by the Rockets, and the Rockets looked great against a Jazz team that really did a great job against the Thunder. They beat the Jazz 110-96 in their first game there. I would contest that the Warriors are still the better team because it looks like with the roster they have now, they're closer to the ceiling than the Rockets are to their ceiling, and you still have Curry who's getting healthy and going to come back. What do you say to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's put it this way. The Rockets certainly had something to prove this year. The Warriors had nothing to prove. And mm-hmm. I think that's where the 65 wins comes from and the 58 wins comes from. The Warriors are trying to make the playoffs every single trying to make the finals every single year. That means that they have to slow down during the regular season. They had injuries. They learned that, and they still won 58 games. And the Rockets were, you know, coming off a disappointing season, another disappointing season. They added Chris Paul. They certainly had something to prove. And so they came out and played with some crazy, crazy intensity throughout the entire season, and they got 65 wins. And good for them, but I don't think they have the talent in a seven-game series, even with home court advantage, to beat a healthy Warriors team 4 out of 7 times. I think it's a six-game series, if both teams make the next round, and I think the Warriors are going to win that game 6 at home at Oracle.
Staying on the Rockets theme, further on, we discussed what these games against the Pelicans are teaching us about a potential series with the 65-win Houston Rockets.
And it starts on the defensive end for the Warriors. The Warriors are actually a slightly better defensive team with Stephen Curry off the floor. They run a little bit less, and they key in on their matchups a little bit more. Obviously, Steph, a small-ish guard, 6'3". He plays the passing game, passing lanes extremely well, but occasionally is abused by bigger guards. And, you know, the starting lineup where you're starting nobody who's shorter than 6'7", super scary. The Warriors' defense pushed the Pelicans into a 97.3 offensive rating. That is 97 points per 100 possessions. That's awful. On the flip side, you can call it a defensive rating of 97.3 for the Warriors, which is absolutely stellar. And the Warriors have played the best defense in the playoffs of any team so far as defensive rating is concerned. And that is extremely scary because they're not even starting a traditional center. They're playing defense by committee with guys who are 6'7 to 6'11, just making it work and swarming players, swarming Anthony Davis, and running people off the line. Nikola Mirotic couldn't get going. They only made 8 out of their 25 three-point attempts in the Pelicans, that is, in this game on Saturday. And that's 32%. That's exactly where the Warriors want to be. They want to be running people off the line. They want to, and that, you know, that's the bread and butter of the Houston Rockets, right? So if the Warriors can key in on their rotations and make sure that every single three-point shot is contested, you know, I think that it spells trouble for the Rockets on the offensive end. Now, offensively, the Rockets have a pretty good defense themselves. Clint Capela is a monster. I will say that it's definitely likely you see JaVale McGee or Zaza Pachulia starting in the conference finals against Capela, that they're going to go back to a traditional center lineup. But at the same time, they don't necessarily have the personnel to, like I said, their defense is solid, but they don't have the personnel to stop every single weapon that the Warriors have at the same time. And somebody is going to get going, or two people are going to get going. Mm-hmm. Or in the case of the game one against the Pelicans, three people are going to get going. You know, so it's just, they have to play perfect basketball for 4 out of those 7 games. And yeah, I don't see it happening.
You're listening to Locked On Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Stay tuned for a preview of tonight's game against the Pelicans and a trip around the NBA in the third segment. We're talking the return of Steph Curry. He has been in good spirits. He's playing kickball in the practice facility again. And he's coming back just in time as a rested Curry will be ready for the extreme pace that the Pelicans bring. And, you know, Klay Thompson said he was tired after game one, the 123-101 bludgeoning of the Pelicans. Only 11 fast break points apiece for each team, but the pace back and forth was very, very fast. New Orleans was the fastest team in the playoffs in terms of pace coming into the playoffs. And with Rondo, Davis, the shooters, you've got Alvin Gentry who loves pushing the pace. And they've picked it up even more since Cousins went down. And it's exhausting. It's exhausting mentally. That's what Durant said. But the Warriors can run with the best of them, and as I mentioned earlier, you're getting a rested, healthy Stephen Curry, who's going to be running all over the place, playing off the ball, running around screens, getting out in the fast break, and generally just making whoever is guarding him, whether it's Rondo, Drew Holiday, Etuan Moore, if he gets a switch, and Anthony Davis or Nikola Mirotic is out there on him, whoever's guarding him is going to have to work. Whoever's guarding him is going to be moved all over the place. And I really think that Steph is going to come out with an eye towards keeping the pace moving. And everybody's just going to have to keep up. You know, they had 2 days of full rest between Saturday and this game Tuesday. So plenty of time to you know, take a deep breath, you know, assess your situation, feel good about that win. Feel good about where you are and, you know, prepare for the next game. And then another 2 full days, though they will be traveling before the game on Friday, game 3, in New Orleans. But what's important, and Steve Kerr said this, is that the Warriors like playing fast. They enjoy it. They enjoy it more than the slog of playing the Spurs or the Rockets, who play at a middling pace and, you know, kind of pound out possessions. You know, this is the Warriors' bread and butter. They led the league in fast break points by a hefty margin, and they did it with flair and panache. And this is exactly the kind of series that can showcase that, especially with Stephen Curry returning to the lineup. So what can we expect? You know, I talked with Colton Molesky earlier this morning about the lineup we can expect. And, like, does he start a traditional center or does he start the death lineup? My prediction is that the death lineup does get the start. Andre Iguodala has been playing so well, starting in place of Stephen Curry, and now will be in place of JaVale slash Zaza. And, you know, he's just doing a little bit of everything. He's shooting the ball fairly well, well enough that you're taking what you can get with that. It's like found money, you know. And then on the other side of the ball, it's just so dangerous. His hands are always in the right spot. He can play you in the post or on the perimeter. He knows where the ball is. He knows how to poke and prod and get you to make mistakes. And he capitalizes on those mistakes so well. You saw it in game one during that 24-2 run. Just so crafty. And then you've got Durant and Draymond Green co-anchoring the 4-5 position, playing Anthony Davis and Nikola Mirotic. They can guard both of those guys. I was talking with Miles Johnson, frequent guest on this show, the other day about how he underestimated Draymond's ability to guard Anthony Davis, to hold his ground. And that's what Draymond has been doing for his entire career, is beating expectations. And, you know, Draymond is 6'5¾" in shoes, pretty sure. And, you know, I mean, he's got the wingspan, but he's got the low center of gravity, but he's got the will. He's got the will, that indomitable will that comes, it's like, it's once in a, you know, once in a blue moon, you get a player like that. And, you know, I'm not saying that Klay and KD and Steph don't have this will, but I think channeled into defensive intensity, there's no player like Draymond Green on the Warriors. Draymond is absolutely necessary to what the Warriors need to do moving forward against Anthony Davis. And particularly the rebounding, like I said on the Locked On Wolves podcast, 15 rebounds. If the Warriors can control the rebounding again, they're going to win the game. Control the rebounding, keep the turnovers to a minimum, of course. And then, of course, there's the devastating Stephen Curry, Kevin Durant pick and roll. That's back on the table, y'all. Back on the table. It's very exciting because what are the Pelicans going to do? You swarm Curry, Kevin Durant does amazing things. You swarm Kevin Durant, Curry shoots over the top. You play straight up, you get bottled up in the screen. You switch, and the Warriors have a mismatch on either side that's to their advantage. It's like the Kobayashi Maru test from The Wrath of Khan. It's a no-win scenario. You can't do anything about it. You just got to play it out and see what happens. And I don't think that they're going to bust out the pick and roll too early, but you're going to see it in the second half. It's going to be there. It's going to be dangerous. And Steph is going to be dangerous. We're talking about Stephen Curry, the most lethal shooter that the league has ever seen. And he's back on the floor. Very exciting. You're listening to Locked On Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Hold up for a trip around the NBA. We're going to be talking Kawhi Leonard. Ramona Shelburne just came out with a very interesting story. We're going to be talking about the Thunder. Zach Lowe wrote a great story about what their next move should be. And we're going to be talking about LeBron, because he is starting his second round series against the Raptors tonight ahead of the Warriors game. Should be fun. But first, I want to talk to you about sponsoring the Locked On Warriors podcast. If your company is looking for a connected audience between the ages of 18 and 49, you need look no further than Locked On Warriors. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, we have all the resources to get your products to the people. So hit me up, illegalcarter11@gmail.com, and I'll give you all the details. We're going to get right into this LeBron James versus the Raptors matchup. And I say that in all seriousness. It's LeBron James versus the Raptors. You know, what you're going to have to see is somebody else really bring it. And I'm not just talking about like Kevin Love from three. I'd love to see a vintage Minnesota Timberwolves Kevin Love game where he just abuses somebody on the block with his array of pet moves and makes a bunch of threes and rebounds the ball. Maybe plays like an all-star. Maybe plays like that one season where he had 26-13 and the Timberwolves didn't make the playoffs that season, of course, but he played like a superstar that season. He was so good, you know, on the offensive end, of course, you know, always a middling defender, but that's what they are going to need going against guys like Jonas Valanciunas, Jakob Poeltl off the bench. You know, it's they need intensity. They need guys to take good shots. They need them to make shots. And, you know, what they did earlier in the season when they played, or late in the season when they played the Raptors, was to run them off the court. They just rained hellfire from three, played good enough defense to get by, but it was the offense that really made it work. And that's what they're going to have to do this time around. The Raptors playing fairly well, you know, 6-game series against the Wizards, but looked really good on the road in game six to take that series. While LeBron had to make it through leg cramps in game seven just to inch past the Indiana Pacers, it's going to be really, really fun to see how Tyronn Lue manages LeBron's minutes, or more appropriately, how LeBron manages LeBron's minutes, because they're going to have to steal a game in one of these first two games in Toronto. And then how is Toronto going to respond continually? Like, they haven't won anything yet. Yeah, they won the first game of their first round series. They broke that awful streak. They won their first round series, and they're looking like the best team in the East. You know, there's other good teams, the Celtics playing so well right now, but they don't, you know, of course, have the star power that the Raptors boast. And you could make the argument that it's the Raptors' conference to lose. And some people have been making that argument, but the Raptors have a history of falling apart in the second round, falling apart in the playoffs, and just kind of like not showing up. And is this the season that, you know, DeMar DeRozan, who has made leaps and bounds as a scorer, as a leader, as, you know, a person, even raising awareness for mental health and all this other kind of stuff, just an all-around great guy, you know, is he going to show up? And Kyle Lowry, can he keep his composure? Can, you know, like, if the shots aren't falling, are they going to give up, or are they going to lock in defensively? It's just, there's a lot of questions about this Raptors team. There's obviously a lot of questions about the Cleveland Cavaliers, specifically, you know, who do they have outside of LeBron? But they have LeBron, the best player in these playoffs so far. And aside from the cramping, he's shown very little signs of slowing down. I want to move on to Kawhi Leonard. Ramona Shelburne had a great story about Kawhi and explained the injuries and the tendinopathy, which is what the Spurs are calling it, but Kawhi's doctors in New York are calling it something else. That's been a point of contention between the team and its star. And, you know, also explaining the group that Greg Popovich continued to reference when asked about Kawhi Leonard and his ongoing recovery. Kawhi's group consists of his agent and his uncle and the people around them who help him make decisions, two people he trusts very much, according to Shelburne and Shelburne's piece, which I would highly recommend you all read. It definitely doesn't really give you an eye into the mind of Kawhi, but it does give you a sense of what's going on around him. And, you know, I'm not saying it's bad or it's good. It's just interesting. It's an interesting read. It's an interesting situation. And I don't think there's any bad guy here. The narrative always asks for a bad guy in lazy writing, you know, it's, when there's a conflict between a team and a player. And Ramona did a really good job of just laying out the facts and presenting them as they are, basically saying, this is what's happening, and we will see what happens in the future. Another very good ESPN writer, Zach Lowe, wrote about Russell Westbrook and what happens next, basically presenting Russ as a superstar who takes more bad shots than anybody else. Long twos, contested threes, making 31% of them, and that the Thunder can ill afford to continue have that to continue to have that be their offense. He took 43 shots in the closeout game the Jazz won over his Thunder, including 19 three-pointers, making 7 of them. That's unsustainable. And here's what Zach Lowe had to say about it. It's fun to imagine how Westbrook might have rounded out his game with Marc Gasol or Nikola Jokic serving as the Tim Duncan to Westbrook's Tony Parker. The Thunder were excited about Domantas Sabonis for this precise reason, but they traded Sabonis for George, and not much about the current version of Westbrook suggests he would mesh well with any of these guys. The obvious answer, unleash Westbrook as the angriest, fastest spread pick and roll point guard in NBA history. Turn those five ugly jumpers into lobs or threes. There is no defense for a Westbrook Adams pick and roll with three shooters surrounding it. He goes on. The Thunder have long known this. In their final two seasons with Durant, their offense evolved in this direction. Early in their careers, Westbrook and Durant touched the ball about the same amount and ran almost the same number of pick and rolls. Those numbers skewed toward Westbrook in 2015 and 2016. Ibaka grew into a reliable three-point shooter, Adams into a lob crammer. Durant worked more off the ball. Good stuff from Zach Lowe there. But as we know, Durant left 5 months later. Westbrook was a one-man wrecking crew in 2016-2017 and now has Paul George, who could be a lesser version of Durant in that spread pick and roll. But the reality is that if Westbrook hasn't changed by now, can we expect him to at all? That's about as much time as I have for today. Make sure you check out this podcast on iTunes, iOS, Spotify, and Google Play. You can get my written work at Forbes.com. And you can get in touch with me via Twitter at Kogitare. That's K-O-G-I-T-A-R-E. Be sure to tune in tomorrow and stay thoughtful, Hoopsheads.